Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 1st of June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Gary Boyson. I want to touch on that Goldfields deal. Market not liking. If we have a moment, we can also touch famous brands. Radio Mayor for Mark from Stanlib. Understanding the structure and benefits of multi-style funds rather than single-style. And then Carl Wells from Flagship Asset Management, Dollar Cost Averaging, Maximizing Offshore Exposure. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com and get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Shock of fuel price hike despite extension of fuel levy. So petrol's up 2.43 in Gauteng, taking it to 23.94. We've still got the 1.50 levy reduction. Then it'll drop by 75 cents for August and then back to normal in September. Perhaps, maybe. Business day. Commerce suspends Kalula and BA flight until funding secured, and I have flights booked for the long weekend in 2 weeks' time. Morning markets. US is red overnight. S&P down 2/3, Nasdaq off 0.33%. Asia mixed. We've got Sydney. In fact, Sydney's just gone green. Couple of points up, and Tokyo up 0.7. Commodities mostly red overnight. Gold, $1,839. Brent, $115.82 a barrel. Platinum, $966. That's the green on the screen. Palladium, $2,003. Rand, $15.64. Top 40 opening call. Looking for about 150 points to the green. That's 0.25% as 10 cent trade down 0.5% in the lunch break in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson. He, of course, from Rand Swiss, portfolio manager there. Gary, appreciate the early morning time. The Goldfields deal, buying Canadian Yamana gold, they're paying, what, $100 billion? Czar, that's about $8 billion Canadian dollars. For a gold company, I mean, certainly it's cash flow positive, although it's on a fairly chunky PE, but free cash flow for the last year, $400 million Canadian dollars. Market did not like it, marked that stock down 20%. Your thought?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the market immediately just went, eek, acquisitions at the top of a market. This is not what we want to see. And I think Chris Griffiths really had to sell it. One of the quotes that I saw him having said was, it flogged to us. We didn't bump into someone in a pub. So you feel like he's really trying to sell the deal to the market. And you can understand why he's got his work cut out for him. So, yeah, as you mentioned, Yamana Gold trading on about 34 times last 12-month earnings. Goldfields only on 11. So, you know, in an all-share deal like this, they clearly are paying up. I mean, if you just do the market cap calculations, you mentioned Yamana Gold, you know, trading on at least the Tokyo Stock Exchange it was actually just under $9 billion Canadian dollars. You convert that back, that works out to about $5.1 billion US dollars. If you do the Goldfields calculation on what they're going to pay in terms of share price, they're going to pay about $6.8 billion. So it does represent about a 33% premium to the in the current environment. Now, you know, is a 33% premium very expensive? If you look at the history of, gold transactions or gold mining transactions over the last 5 years, most of them are almost done at a zero premium. So this is kind of almost out of the ordinary. That said, this is a South African gold miner doing the deal, and South African gold miners have perpetually trade at a discount, so you almost have to pay up if you're going to get international assets. You don't really have a choice, and then we'll think back to how Sibanye at that stage had to pay up to get Stillwater, and everyone was up in arms about how long it would take before they could pay down the debt, and it was too big, and it seemed to have worked out okay. It's the South African mines at Sibanye that are causing problems with the strike. Overall, I mean, it does put them in a stronger ESG position. It brings them down the cost curve slightly, which is being touted. Yeah. Goldfields ASIC is only $1,063 per ounce. It brings them down the cost curve. Yamana Gold is at $1,030 an ounce. So not massively down the cost curve, but these are cheap ounces that are being mined. So I think it's probably a fair price for what they're getting if you do want to expand. Another thing that I just had a look at, if you look at the 14 analysts that cover Yamana Gold at the moment, they have their consensus price target is 31% higher. So I guess that means 33% premium. seems clear.
Okay, so maybe that's what they did, spoke to the analysts. But I take your point. The worries about top of market, but I like the analogy with Sibanye Stillwater. I mean, that really worked. Quick question on famous brands. They're out of the UK, food inflation hurting, consumers hurting. Your take on what wasn't a bad set of results, but in what is a tough market?
There's no question, a very, very tough market. And I think that's what you've really got to focus on here. So yes, I mean, they managed to swing back into a profit, made 355 million instead of a 105 million rand loss. If you look at the revenue though, we are still not at those 2019 levels. So I mean, they had a 38% jump in revenue, but 2019, that takes them up to 6.5 billion in revenue for the year. In 2019, they made 7.7 billion. So still not quite through the worst of it, I guess, but just interesting what they're saying about what's happening. You know, they're primarily a South African operation. I mean, just about all the assets are in South Africa. I mean, they're dealing with, you know, as you say, food price inflation, you know, load shedding, civil unrest. Mm-hmm. All of this is being mentioned in the results. It's a very, very tough environment, but also they're seeing a change to consumer behavior. They're seeing a decline in visits as, you know, food delivery becomes more popular. That's forcing them to have to discount. You know, meal times are blurring. I think it's difficult out. That there's no question, but they're making, you know, their response is to kind of promote value offerings. They try to simplify menus. I think they've got their work cut out for them. So yeah, it's not an expensive share, but I think it's not expensive for a reason.
Yeah, I think that's the key point. Not expensive, but a lot of good reasons for not being expensive. It's Gary Boyson, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss, and our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter is about Goldfield, down almost 20% as it announced that all-share deal to buy the Canadian gold miner. What do you think of the proposed deal? Expensive? Perhaps you think it looks great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Things Radomir from Mark, Head of Index Investments at Stanlib Asset Management. Radomir, appreciate the time today. Talking multi-style funds, I suppose first question is, what exactly is a multi-style fund and how would a fund such as this be constructed?
Hi, Simon. Thank you very much for the opportunity and hello to all the listeners. Simon, so I think a couple of important points to land is how such a multi-style equity fund can give a client a balanced and diversified exposure to the main drivers of returns in the stock market, which are quality, value, and growth. How this has translated into persistent alpha over the last 6 years and why we believe it can persist in future. Why it's able to do so at a very effective and optimal cost structure, and how to blend this with other managers. So in terms of your question on what exactly is multi-style, I think this is an equity fund, but I'm going to give you an example of how to think about style investing by just asset class from equity to a property. And I want you to imagine that you're a real estate investor. Now, a value property is a property that is in a bit of the cheaper side of town, but because the municipal rates and taxes are low, you actually generate quite a significant cash rental income on the property relative to the price that you've paid. Now, that is a value property. On the opposite side of town is an expensive property, kitchen, new bathroom, quality finishes, but because it's in the best part of town, it's expensive, a lot of rates and taxes on it, and therefore it is of lower risk but better quality. And growth property is one where, for example, you've already had the municipality sign off on building plans for you to build a granny flat where you can put a student. So if we take the same concepts of value, quality, and growth from the property example over to the real equity market where we invest, we've got the same concepts but applied slightly differently, where when we talk about growth, we talk about, for the business, the sales, the top line, and the potential for growth in the sales of the business. When we talk about quality, we talk about the ability for the business to translate the top line to the bottom line, so from sales to profits, and then value is the valuation multiples that you pay for this business. Now, we want to try and build a balanced portfolio because these different investment styles perform through different parts of the macroeconomic cycle. When there is a flight to quality, that's typically when everybody wants to own the best property and own the highest quality stocks. When the central banks open the liquidity taps, there is a sort of a dash for trash, and everybody is quite happy to buy value companies and cheap stocks. And we're trying to build a portfolio that gives you a blended exposure across these return drivers at a very competitive price.
In other words, you're never chasing the new hot space because you already own some of it, and it gives you, I imagine, a lower volatility as well?
100%. That is the aim. So we try and build a portfolio that is better than the benchmark. And in this instance, the benchmark is the JSE Cap Swix. But you try and build a portfolio that is better than the benchmark. So better quality than the benchmark, better growth potential than the benchmark, and even at the same time, cheaper. The stock's cheaper than the benchmark. And the translation and the net effect of that is persistent alpha generation at low cost and low correlation.
Yeah, which is exactly what we're looking for investors. Is it a very systematic approach, almost quantitative perhaps, in terms of selection and the different styles?
100%. So we aim to take the emotions out of the investment process. So it's important to know that we use the same information that any other active fund manager use. Yeah. And from the financial statements, we have isolated those key return drivers of quality, value, and growth. But then we remove the emotions to form this balanced and holistic view on every stock. And because we use science and technology, we are able to measure not only the return side of the equation, but also the risks. And because we can measure the risk, we can manage the risk and build this optimal portfolio. We really think of it as the back to basics of active investing.
The multi-style fund, I mean, how does it add value to an existing blend of funds? I imagine, I mean, obviously, there's outperformance. That always is going to add value. I imagine that lower volatility makes it a less scary ride.
So Simon, I think the three main points, perhaps four to touch on here, is the fact that over the last 5 years, the fund is in the top 20% in terms of performance in the Morningstar General Equity category. But as important, it is in the bottom 20% in terms of net expense ratio. So it will bring down, when you combine it with other funds, it will bring down your cost that you have to show or that you see on your fund fact sheet. It will generate alpha. And because the investment process is different than what other traditional managers do, there's a diversification benefit, giving you this blended exposure to these core investment styles, which means this fund can be used as an equity building block and as a core equity building block.
Yeah, and that net expense ratio, I mean, you've mentioned that a couple of times. It's significant. It's massive. It's particularly massive over the long term because, of course, that compounds and the extra money stays in your account and in your fund portion of the fund. A last question, name of the fund in particular that you're managing there?
The fund is called the Stanlib Enhanced Multistyle Equity Fund.
We'll leave it there. That's Rodemar from Mark. He's Head of Index Investments at Stanlib Asset Management. Appreciate the time today.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Today now with Carl Wales. He's from Flagship Asset Management. Carl, appreciate the early morning. In the budget speech back in February, Minister announced that offshore limits for pension funds, which had been effectively 40%, it was 30% for rest of world, 10% for Africa, would now go to 45%, and importantly, 45% anywhere, so whether that be Africa, rest of the world. A lot of folks are saying this is more than enough for offshore. You're saying, no, hang on, you disagree with still being capped at even the higher 45%.
Most South Africans are, in my view, completely overexposed to South Africa. Their homes are based here, their jobs are based here, and any opportunity to diversify further should be welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point there. And I mean, it's also, we forget that, of course, our biggest asset, our house, that is here. Our income potential, which is our job, is here. And as part of the global economy, we are tiny. I mean, we're a fraction of a percent, yet we're probably sitting with perhaps as much as two-thirds of our net worth sitting in that tiny little economy.
Absolutely. And what's even worse is that with the spate of delistings we've seen from the JSE, the opportunity set for most investors locally has shrunk quite substantially.
And the argument around that investing offshore into dollars, you get higher volatility. We certainly see our currency moving. And in the short term, that statement is true, but investing is long term. And when we kind of zoom out and smooth it out, the trends are quite clear.
If you're talking rand volatility, I think you might see higher volatility. But for me, most importantly, is US dollar volatility, and that relates to the fact that you'd rather preserve your wealth in hard currency terms than in soft currency terms.
And that probably is that key. It's that hard versus soft currency and getting into the dollar, which is the global currency of choice, being invested in that. And then again, to your point, the scope of what one can invest in. I mean, I remember looking at the US markets once, and there was like 14 different pizza companies listed. We had one, and it subsequently went bust.
Yes. No. There's a wealth of opportunities internationally, and it's not just the US. I mean, if you look at the large European markets as well, the large Asian markets, there really is a universe of opportunity out there.
And then is it as simple? We're currently seeing pressure in global markets, US markets, European markets, more so than our own. And this is the classic, opportunity sailors on. Use that dollar cost averaging. If we're just doing monthly transactions, again, when we look back in 3, 5, 10 years' time, we're going to be looking at some of the prices we paid and thinking these were really attractive.
Absolutely. So if you look at a long enough period, I think the trend in the rand is pretty clear, and it's depreciated substantially over the last couple of years. But people are always scared of taking their money out at the worst time. And I think to limit people's fear in that respect, it's better to sort of increase your allocation to offshore assets. So slowly and steadily over a prolonged period. So you're never at risk of buying in at the worst, at the strongest US dollar exchange rate and, damaging your capital base as a result.
Yeah, rather than that, and every time the rand crashes, and it does from time to time, we see everyone rushing offshore at that particular point, typically the worst point to do it, rather stick to a process, monthly, quarterly, whatever the case may be, just have a system in place and don't even look at the currency exchange rate, just move the money.
Absolutely.
We'll leave that there. That's Carl Wales. Find him, Flagship Asset Management. Carl, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Perthy Radenhays yesterday about Brent. It had traded up to 122. In fact, as I was chatting to him yesterday morning, it touched 123. It's come back this morning, now trading just under 116. But of course, Europe wants to ban Russian oil, with the exception being Hungary. They're going to say Hungary sort of a carve-out exception, which means that we need to find about another sort of 10% of global oil supply, which is about 9 million barrels a day. So the question we asked you, where do you think oil is heading? 55% of you were like, it's heading higher. It's absolutely heading higher. With about 45% of you saying lower. In other words, a slight edge to the higher, but almost exactly what a market is, which is, well, disagreement. That is what moves prices. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlip. Visit stanlip.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlip Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb websites and the app, 6:30. 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokle, Nicole and Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll talk again tomorrow. We're going to be chatting copper and the copper ETN with Johan Erasmus.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.